Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. And whatever your age, we welcome you. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent. My name is Lois Weir, and I'm joined in welcoming you today by Liz Bright, our Director of Religious Education, Karen Lapidus, and my daughter, Megan May.
These words today are borrowed from a breadsmith and an artisan. She writes, "Making bread is a romantic experience, a story of creation. Individual ingredients lie dormant until they're brought to life by the process. The dough filled with promise has never failed me. Never have I not loved its feel in my hands, warm and responsive, taking part of me with it into the magic. Believe as I believe, and the experience will engage you in something quite mystical."
We who gather here this morning come for sustenance. We come to break bread together. We come bearing the ingredients of and for creation. We bring ourselves. With the blending of hearts and minds, we join in the work of loving hands which learn to knead the dough. And in the warmth of fellowship, we'll rise to the staff of life. Come, let us worship together.
Today was submitted to the This I Believe Project by Leah Allman from San Diego, California. We're going to start today by passing out some bread dough. And we're doing this because we want to give you a chance to get a feel for what bread dough is like. You get a chance to knead it and smell it and squeeze it and taste it, if you're daring, and experience it. Although we do ask you that please be careful, kind of keep it together. Don't let bits of it get on the carpet, on the seats. We like to be nice to our sexton here. And please enjoy. The essay I'm going to read was submitted to the This I Believe Project by Leah Allman from San Diego, California. And it was broadcast on the Bob Edwards Show on September 23rd, 2011. Doing things the slow way. I believe in the power of doing things the slow way, by hand. Every Friday morning, I bake a loaf of bread. It started when my grandmother gave me a recipe for challah, the sweet braided egg bread eaten on the Jewish Sabbath. I made it a few times, but the texture was always wrong, and it seemed like it took the entire day. I made it only when I felt I could spare the time. But after 7 or 8 or maybe 10 times, something shifted. The bread was getting better, more consistent, and I realized that making it when I had the time was fine, but making it when I didn't have the time, when work deadlines were pressing, meant even more. You can't hurry bread. Well, you can use quick-rise yeast, but I don't. Waiting for the dough to rise, I get my weekly reminder to slow down and savor the process. Bread baking takes alternate spells of physical immediacy and patient distance. Feeling the dough grow elastic beneath my palms connects me to something primal, almost sacred. Twisting the strands into a unified braid reminds me every time I do it of pulling together the disparate strands of myself into a tighter, more unified whole. What could be more symbolic? The process takes time, certainly more than grabbing a packaged loaf off the bakery shelf, but it's dense with consciousness. Doing it the slow way allows gratitude to seep in. It replaces a quick errand with an act of mindful resistance against our culture of convenience. I've augmented my grandmother's recipe, added a little sugar and a little vanilla for richness. Knowing that these same ingredients pass through her hands connects me to her in a deep and silent way. And knowing that women all over the world, probably not so many anymore, but some, are also mixing, kneading, and braiding their Friday loaves makes my connection to tradition palpable. For years now, it's been my ritual every Friday. Sometimes it takes some juggling of the schedule to fit in the two risings, but the dough is pretty forgiving. It seems willing to work around me. For, year, By the time my children get home from school, the challah is baked and cooling on a rack. They step into the house, and the first thing they do is pause and take a deep breath of the warm, yeasty, honeyed air. My making challah helps them temper their pace, too, and recognize the power in doing some things the slow way, by hand. And now we have a couple of reflections from some members of our congregation who are bread bakers, and we'll start with Bonnie Esparza.
I have a cottage industry called Bonnie's Bread, and it's a little bit like chasing nutritional prescriptions. The secret ingredients are time and temperature, otherwise seen as patience and circumstance. Combining flour, water, yeast, and salt began with an after-school box mix pizza at a best friend's house after school when I was my daughter's age. Seriously, again, with my first college apartment, with a goal of packing in as much nutrition as I could fit in a loaf without it falling apart. And that meant, you know, walnuts and seeds and honey and molasses and yogurt and eggs and milk. And I had been on a diet for high protein, eating every 2 hours, and was trying to turn this simple carbohydrate into something with protein that I could eat. And then I'd share my experience for Christmas with 30 to 60 people because loaves of bread made good gifts. Years later, when Brady's Cafe was invited to support the fledgling farmers market, bread was in my routine again. And 20 years later, the fledgling farmers market is a festival every weekend in Kent. And but during that time, the coffee shop closed and I stopped making bread. And thanks to Bev Cole, who asked me to sell her loaves at coffee hour on Sunday, and Joel Slater, who encouraged me to make a profit and that I could donate 10%, and I started making bread again, and the farmers market found out and invited me back, and the health food store found out and invited me back there. And that's where it got kind of interesting, because the health food store now wanted organic ingredients. And that's what I learned, that commercial flour mills, strips the bran out of the wheat, mills it at such a high speed that the nutrition is destroyed. It's required by law to be enriched because they noticed problems in people's health from the lack of nutrition in our commercial flour, so our flour is now all required to be enriched. But if you buy stone-milled flour or bread made with stone-milled flour, then it's made the slow way. It's not getting hot enough to destroy the wheat germ, and you have the B and E vitamins that come in the wheat the way it's grown. So instead of making a bread that's packed full of as many things I can stuff into it, now I'm working on quality ingredients, organically grown with mineral-tested soil, stone-milled flour. And then I make different kinds of breads that have one with seeds or one with molasses and honey and another one. I've spread it out to a variety of breads that I make and just work on making one simple good loaf with quality ingredients, and we even have a farm in town that grows wheat that can be used for bread, which is unusual for Ohio. And my prescription for nutritional baking of bread has turned to just a more simpler looking for quality ingredients. And that's what I do now. It's how I support my family. My dad wanted me to say, I need the dough because I need the dough. All right, so there we go. And if I'm selling at the church, we're donating to the minister's discretionary fund. And that's what
we do. Miller.
My mom was not a bread baker. Her family migrated to Ohio from western Kentucky, and my mom would bake buttermilk biscuits and stovetop cornbread made in a hinged skillet for us, but not bread. We would enjoy the brown bread that my dad would sometimes bring home from the bakery. So I first learned about bread baking from my grandmother. We called her Mimi. When we were children in the 50s, it was customary for our family to go to Mimi's on Sunday after church for the traditional roast beef and the trimmings style of Sunday dinner. Mimi was a homemaker during the Great Depression. She knew how to make her ingredients go far. So more rarely, on a weeknight, we were lucky to be treated to a supper of her beans and buns, a reminiscence of the Depression-era meals that she devised from the staples on hand. We would arrive at her house on Bender Avenue and pile out of the station wagon. We could smell the heady and earthy fragrance of yeast as we clambered up her back porch. Soon, she would lift the shiny, plump rolls out of the oven. Mm-mm. Intoxicating. We were sure that these buns were not mere biscuits. My family attended the First Universalist Church of Akron in its historic building on the corner of Mill and Broadway in downtown Akron. We loved our Sunday school, especially when classes by choice were offered. Choices included photography, science experimentation, music, poetry writing, crafts and plays. My sister Leslie and I always chose the cooking class. We helped make everything from Indian vegetable curry to German buttercream tort to English stone soup from our teachers Miriam Agarwal, Inez File, and Poppy Mullen. We had the great fortune of learning the art, science, and the joy of bread baking from our mentor Marion Dickey Hoffman. Mrs. Hoffman delighted us with her 10-loaf recipe for Mother's Weekday bread. We all joined in to help with the kneading, dozens of little fingers. That was one big pile of dough, but we felt so empowered. Throughout my adult life, I've enjoyed the natural therapy of baking bread. Mainstays such as everyday breads and pizza dough, and experimentation with fancy breads like challah and shtollen. I've tinkered with Hermann's and sourdoughs, feeling so grateful for the tasty results. More recently, I've tried baking gluten-free bread with mixed and sometimes puzzling consequences. Soon after Jim and I were married, one Friday night after work, I suggested that we make pizza. He was a great cook. He made the sauce and chopped the toppings. I made the dough. It was a joy, a fantastic collaboration. Not long after that, I came home from work one day to the aroma of yeast emanating from our apartment. Never one to shy away from a new, intriguing cooking challenge, Jim had looked up a recipe and had baked bread. Utterly confounded and amazingly delighted with the success of his adventure, he said thoughtfully, "I always thought that baking bread was some kind of magic. Mysterious. And, you know, mystical." I replied, "Yes, of course, it is." Later, Jim perfected bread baking when studying at the Zona Spray Cooking School. He was a master of patience in the kitchen, and he imparted this gentle art to me. In the baking of bread, first, he had to see if the day was going to be the right kind of day for baking bread. Jim would never try to squeeze in errands or projects or have other pressures on a bread baking day. The rising would not be rushed, nor would it be neglected. The bread needed its own time, the mystery to unveil, the magic to unfold, and the mystical part, oh yes, of course.
So what do you think about the dough? Does it smell good? Have you tasted it? And actually, you know, you can take that home with you and you can put it on a baking sheet and let it rise and bake it for 10 or 15 minutes at 400 degrees, and you'll have a roll when you get home. So there you go. Bread making is an experience for all the senses, and I'm glad you can share that with us a little bit today. The bread making service that follows is a piece of living history. About 2 years ago, when Liz joined the Sunday program committee, she brought with her a worn copy of a manuscript that she found among her mother's things in the attic. Poppy Mullen, who Claudia mentioned earlier, was a devoted and engaged member of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Akron for most of her adult life, and her daughter Liz was raised in this church community. And the discovery of this manuscript brought back memories of her mother leading this bread-making service back in 1975. And in particular, she recalled the smell of bread baking during the service. And we actually did put a couple loaves of bread in the oven downstairs, but with all the pancakes and everything, I don't know if you're getting it or not up here. But because Liz has a deep and abiding respect and love for baking, she felt that the topic would be perfect for a lay-led service at our church, and I had to agree. I also found the idea of recreating something historic kind of intriguing, and therefore we decided to adapt the manuscript for this service. We added the modern reading that I read at the beginning and the reflections from Claudia and Bonnie. And then we took the original service and we omitted a few parts, but we really didn't modify much. We just took a little bit out to make it fit into our time period here. This worship service, which is a celebration of the ancient domestic rite of bread making, was developed by a women's discussion group of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Melrose, Massachusetts, for the Unitarian Universalist Association. And because the UUA made these manuscripts available to all of its UU churches, we might assume that it had been presented several times to several congregations. And you'll note that the language is at times a little bit archaic, and its references to bread making as the domain of women kind of goes against our modern anti-sexist sentiments. But whenever these bother you, I ask you to just kind of mentally substitute the word people for women or something like that in your head, and accept the transgression as an artifact of history. It is what it is. We considered rewriting the text, but in the end we felt that it might lose some of its historical feel if we strayed too far. And curiously, this service also heavily references the biblical significance of bread and yeast. And my memories of growing up UU in the 70s include a conspicuous absence of Judeo-Christian theology in any of our worship services in my congregation, which was the Canton Fellowship. In fact, as I recall it, references even to God were very few, and carefully worded so not to offend atheist sensibilities. And Liz and I had similar recollections. And so I find it kind of interesting that the writers of this service had the confidence to include the biblical quotes. So you'll notice that too. What is clear from the readings and recollections that follow is the deep reverence that the writers had for the rite of bread baking and the spiritual significance that it held for them.
Our Daily Bread by Grace N. Crowell. An ancient rite as old as life is old, a woman making bread above a flame. Its value is far greater than pure gold. It is ageless, timeless, and the simple name of bread is wholesome as the summer sun that lit and warmed the fields that men might eat. It is clean as the winds, as are the winds that run their light foot way across the waving wheat. A loaf is only half a loaf unless we share it and unless we say our grace above it. Asking God to bless the bread that he has given day by day. Oh, women, handle flour as you should. It is a great thing, God-given, priceless, and good.
There was worship when humans first experienced awe and joy in observing the patterns of nature and the wondrous parts of the world about them. This particular worship service began from the Yeast of Venom Prizers, which is an organization of UU women from Melrose, Massachusetts, meeting. As one of the group professed to have no creative ability, another spoke out that to make a collage of interesting pictures and news clippings was a worthwhile kind of creativity. Another said that to make bread was also genuine creativity. And from there on, the yeast continued to grow on the theme of bread into what seemed a feeling of worship worthy of sharing with you. Down through the ages, bread has been largely essential to man's survival. The staff of life means different things to each of us, and it has a different meaning at different times in our lives. The vocal contributions we have to offer this morning will illustrate this variation, coming from many more sources than we have participants. We wish to give time for the yeast to grow in meaning for each of us here today, and so we will employ the use of a very democratic type of worship, silence. We will have several periods of silent meditation in which to savor and absorb the spoken message. During the silence, we will try to relax and let meaning seep into our beings. The words used may speak directly to our own condition, or they may spark thoughts in a tangent in any direction suited to the individual. One or several of the spoken messages may nourish or give direct guidance in helping us discover implications for our own lives. Our purpose today is that we will all experience a quickening awareness of the wonder of some of the simple things in our everyday lives. May our words, followed by periods of meaningful silence, bring us renewal and help us to continue to discover the element of creative growth which permeates both nature and human relations.
By Helene Glor. I grew up in a German part of Switzerland. My parents had a big shop near Bern. In those days, bread was really part of our daily life, with many different meanings. Bread means happiness. When I think of the lovely smell of warm bread coming out of the oven, I could never resist taking a deep breath, even though I had to pay for it with a couple dozen sneezes. I am very allergic to the smell. I can't help smiling when I think about an incident when I was about 4 years old. I was hiding behind the counter with a small loaf of bread hidden under my apron. I had made a small hole in the bottom and with my fingers took out all the soft part out. When I couldn't reach anymore, I put it back on the bread shelf. The customer who had bought it came back the next day to complain, and my mother made sure it would not happen again. Bread means hard work. I think of the years I had to carry 15 to 30 pounds of bread on my back to deliver it to our customers. I started this when I came into the second grade, and I had to do this 2 times a week during lunch. Each year I graduated to a bigger huta and a bigger wrap. A huta is a kind of basket which has 2 leather straps, so you can carry it like a knapsack. From the 4th grade on, I had to go 4 times a week. At this time, my little brother had arrived, and I had to push the baby carriage along while I was on my tour. So Hans Lee had a chance to get some fresh air. It was not too bad as long as he was in the carriage, but when he began to walk and run, it often became a pretty frightening experience. For part of it, I had to follow a very busy street, and Hans Lee enjoyed nothing better than running away from me. I remember an incident when I was about 12. Hans Lee had a loose shoelace, and I bent down to tie it. All the lovely golden brown bread tumbled onto the ground. Needless to say, Hans, as young as he was, realized how upset Mama would be with both of us. Fortunately, a shopkeeper came out, helped us to quickly pick up the loaves, took us inside and brushed them off, and put them back in my huta. The smell of fresh bread brings back this memory along with another. Dark, frosty evenings rushing into the shop where the smell meant a warm, safe evening with my family.
Thoughts on yeasts, prepared by the Reverend Judith Urquhart. What is yeast? From the Encyclopedia Britannica, yeasts are usually classified as fungi, although they do not always exhibit all the characteristics of a fungi. Yeast thrive in a variety of environments, for example, in soil, on plants, on ripe fruit, in animals and humans. But man also puts the yeast spores to his use. The history of man's knowledge using yeast spores is very long. From the book of Exodus, "This day shall be for you a memorial day, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. You shall observe it as an ordinance forever. 7 days shall you eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall put away leaven out of your houses, for if anyone eats what is leavened, from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. And you shall observe the feast of unleavened bread, for on this very day I brought your hosts out of the land of Egypt. And the Egyptians were urgent with the people to send them out of the land in haste. So the people took their dough before it was leavened, their kneading bowls being bound up in their mantles on their shoulders. And they baked unleavened cakes of the dough which they had brought out of Egypt, for it was not leavened, because they were thrust out of Egypt and could not tarry. Neither had they prepared themselves any provisions. And Moses said to the people, 'Remember this day in which you came out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage, for by the strength of the hand of the Lord brought you out from this place. No leavened bread shall be eaten these days.'" Yeast is useful, and for its size, very powerful. From the Gospel of Luke, "And again he said, 'To what shall I compare the kingdom of God? It is like the leaven which a woman took and hid in 3 measures of meal till it was all leavened.'" And from the first letter of Paul to the Christians at Corinth, "Your boasting is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven ferments the whole lump of dough?" But what we have read is not yet the full truth about yeast. More from the Encyclopedia Britannica. "Yeasts thrive in a variety of environments. For example, in soil, on plants, on ripe fruit, in animals, and in humans. Moniliasis and thrush in infants and adults are caused by a yeast, so yeast can be an illness. And as well as being a useful means to improvement of our foodstuffs, yeasts are also among the most prevalent spoilers of food. Dairy products may be spoiled by lactose fermenting yeasts." And this from the Gospel of Matthew. "How is it that you fail to perceive that I do not speak about bread? Because of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Then they understood that he did not tell them to beware of the leaven of bread, but of the teaching of the Pharisees and the Sadducees." So perhaps it is well for us to reflect on these things as we see before us the use of yeast. If our world is like the bread in the making, what can a study of yeast and grass tell us about ourselves?
We close with these words from Cahil Gibran. "For if you bake bread with indifference, you bake a bitter bread that feeds but half a man's hunger. Blessed be."